Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Before we get into our story, I want to talk about some exciting news for Variant Frequencies. One of our stories, Absolution Insured by Matt Wallace, won Best Short Fiction in the Parsec Awards. We are proud to be the first winners of the award in this category. All of the podcasts were deserving. We are honored to be among them. Thank you to Farpoint Media for making this happen. Please stick around at the end of our podcast for a promo from Skepticality. We chose their promo to thank Derek and Swoopy for all of their hard work at DragonCon 2006. Now, for the real reason you are here, to listen to one of our stories. This episode is a cyberpunk tale by guest author Darren Reed. Cell by Darren Reed. Life on the very edge of the solar system is a bleak nightmare, punctuated by the blissful euphoria afforded by the drug Trace. Andy is a Trace addict. Trace is Andy's only escape from his crushing life. But a new drug is taking a hold of Andy. Cell is strong, addictive, and above all else, the cell is being hunted. Andy awoke to the heavy rumbling sound of operating machinery, discharging airlocks, and industrial white noise. The latter was almost always present, a sound Andy and virtually everyone else living upon the Sonari had come to ignore simply by habit. The dual sound of heavy industrial machinery and the distinctive noise of discharging airlocks were unique to the time of day, 7 a.m. Reluctantly, he pushed himself upright, his face numb from an unsettled night's sleep upon a computer keyboard. With a blank autonomy, he ran his cold hands over his body, unconsciously fixing the thin black tie that hung loosely around his neck, and loosening his shirt collar by another button. His small, cramped room was bathed only in a dull green light given off by the old-style computer monitor upon his desk. The chamber stank of old instant meals and sweat, an unfortunate side effect of such tiny living quarters. Pressed against the wall of the chamber was a thin bunk, no more than a foot away from where he now sat at his desk. Upon the desk, next to the old computer, was a loose stack of papers and a cooking unit, surrounded in half-emptied, partially open packets of food. Reluctantly, Andy pushed himself upright and stretched his back, smiling grimly as his spine cracked loudly in the room. Turning to one side, he slid open a thin, narrow door which entered into a tiny bathroom. Taking a single, sideways step, he was in his shower stripping off yesterday's clothes. It was important that he hang his old black trousers, tie, and shirt in just the right position. He couldn't afford to let them get wet, but with space at such a premium, there would be no other way to work out the creases other than the steam from the shower. After a few moments under a pitiful dribble of water, Andy fell out of his bathroom and back into the main living area of his quarters, awkwardly fetching his only other outfit from under his bunk, a plain, slightly creased white shirt, a narrow black tie, and a pair of black trousers. With little ritual, he was dressed and out of his quarters, moving through the cramped corridors of the Sonari. The Sonari, like most space stations in the outer arc of the solar system, was a loose mix of interlocking modules and meeting areas. Every 20 feet or so, Andy would pass a tiny window through which he could see the vast emptiness of space, or if he was lucky, the very edge of the asteroid belt. Neither interested him much. He had traveled as far as the asteroid belt some years before, but since the experience, he had avoided long-distance space travel as far as was possible to do so. That was not to say he did not travel. One had to in order to escape the constant claustrophobia of the Cenari. But he avoided the long-haul trips. Andy wound his way through the identical passages of the space station. At some point, he did not know when, the early morning blast of heavy machinery dropped off into the anonymous hum of industrial white noise that constantly filled the station. Only the ever-diminishing sound of discharging airlocks remained, though by the time he reached his designated place of work, these too had faded to obscurity. The work pit, as Andy and a few of his colleagues called it, was little more than a cramped, plainly decorated room lined with row after row of desks, upon which sat computers, not dissimilar to Andy's own. Sitting at the desks were Andy's many colleagues. They could not really be called friends, each wearing slightly creased white shirts with an assortment of loosely bound ties. Without regarding another human being, Andy took his place, middle of the second row, and started operating the computer, inputting a seemingly endless stream of numbers, his fingers dancing effortlessly across the noisy keyboard. Within minutes, he had loosened his tie, struggling with the tiny knot that held it together, and ripped open his top button. The heat generated in the work pit was surprising to Andy, even after all this time, dozens of sweating bodies pressed together at close quarters, separated only by a small desk and a large heat-generating monitor. Without thought, he undid his second button. Minutes slipped into hours as Andy worked, exchanging the occasional polite pleasantry, the kind that people say through gritted teeth to one another, their faces masked with smiles that look more like grimaces, with one or another of his colleagues. As the three-hour mark slid by unnoticed by almost every person in the room, Andy's right arm began to shake. He had become engrossed in his work, difficult for even Andy to imagine happening. But after all this time, it was all that could realistically be expected of him. He had no idea of the time until the shaking of his right arm became so intense that he was no longer able to type with that arm. Discreetly, he leaned forward over the quivering limb and pulled up the sleeve of his shirt, wrapping it as he went so that it stayed just below the elbow. Embedded in the pale underside of his forearm, about halfway between the wrist and the elbow, was a small mechanical unit that looked vaguely like a very old-fashioned cassette player, only much smaller. Sparing a brief glance to ensure that none of his colleagues were watching him, Andy leaned farther forward, tapping the unit on his arm, and watched a small cartridge pop out. Closely he examined the spent cartridge, looking through a small transparent visor built into the main unit, three tiny bottles which had only a few days ago been filled with a deep scarlet liquid were now conspicuous only by their emptiness. Silently, Andy groaned, dropping the useless cartridge into the only drawer in his desk. As discreetly as he could manage, he slid out from behind his desk and started walking towards the only door into the work pit. As he reached the heavy metal hatch, a voice squawked from behind him. "Andy! You're leaving already?" Slowly, Andy turned towards the owner of the voice. A short, middle-aged, balding man named Charles. It wasn't that Andy had any particular problem with Charles. He had certainly done nothing in particular to wrong him. But he was just that kind of man. The type who doubted upon his job and responsibilities, ignoring the utter futility of what he did and the complete irresponsibility of his position. Charles stood facing Andy, his arms folded over a wide stomach that was barely contained behind a cheap, bulging cotton shirt. Bile rose up to the back of Andy's throat. "Yes, Mr. Pinsani. I thought I'd use some of the break time I had accumulated." An awkward silence drew out between the pair, at least partly caused by the self-loathing that surged through Andy every time he forced himself to speak deferentially to Charles Pinsani. The taste of bile in the back of Andy's throat was tangible now. Charles chuckled to himself, shaking his head at the cold deck plating below his feet. "Andy, Andy, Andy." The fat, middle-aged man began in his most sardonic of tones. Haven't we been over this? All due time off must be arranged before it is taken. After all, if I took the time off I was due, I probably wouldn't be seen for weeks.
Andy nodded in silent agreement, mentally cursing himself for every shake of his head. No doubt what Charles said was nothing but the complete truth. He was, after all, exactly that kind. To work unpaid overtime and see it as the rest of the workforce's duty to do likewise. After all, if he could do it, so could everyone else.
I'm sorry. I made an appointment. May I?
Charles dismissed Andy with an absent flap of his hand, showing clearly upon his face his disappointment that a fellow employee could not be as selfless as he, actually demanding the time off he was due. Other than the initial disappointment shake of his head, Andy saw none of this, turning his back upon Charles and charging out of the door at as fast a pace as he could manage with dignity. At a pace just shy of a jog, Andy moved through the scenery, ignoring the mostly identical scenery as he passed, frequently ducking to avoid some of the lower ceilings. It took only a few minutes for him to escape the narrow connecting units that made up the majority of the scenery and enter the vast space of the market. The market was indeed vast and open, though only relative to other areas of the scenery. A number of assorted stalls filled the large chamber. Bodies moved between them, colliding with one another and exchanging pleasantries, though only occasionally. At the far end of the chamber sat a small restaurant that the more wealthy inhabitants and visitors of the scenery frequented. Beyond the edge of the stalls, slipping away from the populous market, was a particularly narrow set of corridors that Andy had come to know well. Without looking around, he charged into the muddled mass of people who were moving through the marketplace. A giant of a man wearing thick overalls that stank of asteroid ore, a small waspish woman in a very downplayed gray suit, three or four children charging through the sparse stretches of open floor, a single woman holding a starving child alone among the group. Apologizing for the occasional collision, Andy charged through the throng, his head down and his features obscured. A cold sweat was breaking out all over his body. Nervously, he raised his right arm, using his rolled-up shirt sleeve to wipe the worst of it from his forehead, until he at last broke out of the throng, facing into the darkened, twisting corridor he had been aiming for. Without hesitation or consideration, Andy stepped forward and into the corridor, his eyes focused ahead of him, his feet leading instinctively to where he had to go. Andy passed through a few more corridors, ignoring the ever-constricting space and growing smell of leaking gas, walking forward, turning right, then left, then right. He marched onto his destination, finding when he got there not a soul.
"You missed me?"
Andy pivoted on his heels towards the voice that had spoken from behind him, his heart beating audibly in his ears as he did so. Seeing who it was that spoke, his racing heart immediately began to slow in satisfied relief. Reese wore a simple pair of worn jeans and a long-sleeved black top with no discernible insignia. His face was sharp and narrow, and his widening grin forced deep, devilish dimples into his face. Absently, Reese knocked a strand of his long, muddy blonde hair out from in front of an eye. Andy smiled manically back towards Reese.
"Jesus Christ, man, you scared the hell out of me."
"Oh, me?"
Reese walked towards Andy, that same wide grin spread across his face.
"Nice try," Andy groaned, watching Reese as he swaggered forwards. "Have you got some stuff for me?" "Whatever happened to small talk, Andy? You used to be full of it, you know. Besides, aren't you supposed to be working?"
"I'm on a break."
"Good for you."
Andy took an instinctive step forward, cold sweat erupting on his forehead again, his right arm starting to tremble worse than before. He could not abide Reese's games even after all this time, or possibly because of it. Either way, he was in no mood.
"For Christ's sake, Reese, stop messing with me. Have you got it or don't you?"
"My, my," Reese crooned, smiling mischievously at Andy. "You really are in a hurry today, aren't you?"
Against every fiber of his being, Andy forced himself to take one very long, deep breath, ignoring Reese's bait. With no small amount of effort, he forced himself to meet Reese's glare with a straight, unsmiling face. A moment of silence drew out between the pair until Reese finally broke Andy's gaze, acquiescing with a small chuckle.
Okay, I got your stuff, Reese said in a voice near a whisper. Here.
In Reese's outstretched hand was a cartridge, almost identical to the empty one Andy had placed in his drawer some short time before. Instinctively, Andy grabbed for the cartridge, which was promptly snatched away from him by Reese. Fumbling after the failed grasp, Andy turned to meet Reese's own very cold glare. When Reese spoke, none of the early playful humor remained.
Not so fast, Andy. We've not sorted out the logistics.
What logistics? Andy snapped before catching himself. You're going to try and fleece me?
It's not that simple, I'm afraid.
This, Reese opened his closed fist to reveal the cartridge again,
is a triple dose.
A triple? How the hell did you get that in the outer system?
Never mind. And don't ask me that question. Ever. Understand?
Andy nodded slowly, recoiling slightly at the anger in Reese's voice. Looking down at his feet, Andy took a moment to compose himself, taking a long, slow breath of air.
How much? Now that's more like it.
Reese smiled again, though the coldness in his eyes never departed.
17.
From behind Reese, a noise sounded like pieces of metal snapping and coming together. The last remnants of his smile faded from his face. Reese turned towards the noise. To Reese's left, just behind a turning in the corridor, a small figure stepped out. In one long, outstretched arm, the figure held a seamless steel tube no wider than a pen. The end of the strange tube faded from seamless steel into a kind of strange glowing sphere that bathed the dim corridors in a strange pulsating scarlet light. Seeing the figure, Reese's face twisted and contorted, first in shock and horror, then in rage. Before Reese had a chance to move, the figure brought the strange glowing tube down hard upon Reese's jaw, knocking him sprawling to the floor in a sea of swirling red lights and pulses. Andy froze on the spot.
Where the hell is it?
The figure said in a voice quivering with rage.
Where is the cell?
Reese lay still for a moment before his expression hardened in tough resolve. He sneered up at the stranger before leaning to one side and spitting on the deck plating. The stranger made no reply to the insult other than to place a heavy boot square upon Reese's chest, pushing him solidly to the ground. Andy watched the brief exchange from a position of abstract disbelief. The figure seemed lacking in any immediately distinguishing features, his upper body covered by a deep brown jacket with its collar turned up, obscuring the bottom half of his face. Of what Andy could see of the stranger, it was his eyes that made the biggest impression. Wide and penetrating, they were a deep hazel that glowed in the reflected light of the strange object. He was aiming down at Reese's head. Andy very slowly edged away from his position, moving subtly towards the corridor behind Reese and his assailant. The stranger took almost no notice of Andy, just another trace junkie. As he started moving, his wide eyes never leaving Reese's own, the pair content, for the time being at least, to stare each other down. As Andy slid towards his escape, he turned to look back at Reese, who was now sneering up at the stranger, a look of open defiance written across his face. Reese's arms were outstretched upon the ground. Under his left hand, protruding just past the edge of his palm, was the corner of a cartridge that looked identical to the one Andy had thrown into his desk drawer some short time previously. Andy's heart sank. The cartridge was not identical to the one he had discarded. A triple dose, Reese had told him. The stranger started to speak again in harsh, barking tones. Reese broke in, yelling something about merchandise being stolen from him. Andy didn't really hear, nor did he care to. His eyes were fixed upon the corner of the cartridge that was almost concealed under Reese's hand. Suddenly, and without warning, the stranger lunged forward and, grabbing Reese roughly by his shirt, lifted him and hurtled him against the hard corridor wall. The stranger's attention was now completely focused on Reese, and Andy's escape path was clear. Andy was close to taking it, probably would have had the sudden attack upon Reese not sent the cartridge hurtling away from the pair and back to Andy's original position. The sight of the triple-dose cartridge flung clear of both men was too much for Andy to resist. Immediately, his eyes lit up, and he turned to the cartridge. The yelling between Reese and the stranger was now nothing more than an indiscriminate groan at the back of his consciousness. Andy's heart was beating fast, the sound filling his ears as he slowly walked towards the cartridge. Every step seemed to draw out as the cartridge grew closer, gradually filling his whole field of vision as he leaned towards it, wrapping his shaking fingers around its cold, satisfying form. It was heavy, a lot heavier than any cartridge Andy had held before. Greedily, he thrust out his right arm, roughly pressing down upon the mechanical cartridge unit. The flat top immediately opened, revealing metal plastics and whirring. Without looking, he pressed the cartridge into his arm and pushed shut the top of the unit. Almost immediately, his body began to relax and fill with a sensation of absolute joy. Smiling, Andy looked down at the working unit on his arm. He was ready to make his discreet exit now. Before he had taken more than 3 steps back towards his escape route, his right arm began to shake again, though this time it was no small quivering but the beginnings of an uncontrollable spasm. Andy looked down upon his arm with a growing sensation of horror that cut through the ecstatic hysteria that had begun to encompass his body. A thin yellow liquid started to escape from the edges of his cartridge loader, dripping slowly from his arms onto the deck plating below. Panic welled up in Andy's gut as he reached forward with a hand, vainly pressing the top of the unit to eject the cartridge. A piercing, grating sound exploded through his ears at that moment, and he dropped painfully to his knees, both of his hands moving instinctively towards his ears, a mangled scream escaping his lips. At the sound of the cry, the stranger immediately turned his head towards Andy. Seeing the thin yellow liquid starting to drip out of his arm, the stranger turned again towards Reese, his face a mask of pure rage.
"You gave the cell to him?" "No. He must have stolen it."
Before Reese could finish, the stranger threw a punch into his face, sending Reese towards the ground unconscious. Pivoting away from Reese's fallen figure, the stranger crossed the distance between himself and Andy in 2 long strides, immediately pulling him upright. Roughly, the stranger held open each of Andy's eyelids in turn, watching as the pupils reacted wildly. Vainly, the stranger pressed against the surface of Andy's cartridge unit. Ignoring the long stream of foaming saliva that was now escaping from his mouth, the stranger hooked one of Andy's arms over his shoulder and started to walk him at as quick a pace as he could manage away from Reese's unconscious body. The claustrophobic corridors of the Sonari's outer service areas started to give way to much wider, cyclical corridors. They were nearing the port where the stranger's ship was docked. Reese had been unconscious before he hit the deck plating, but he was not unconscious for long. Groggily, he pulled himself back to his feet, his head swaying and his stomach churning as he did so. Absently, he felt his pockets for the missing cell, only vaguely remembering Andy's piercing scream before jail had knocked him out. The cell, of course, was not there. But sealed in the back of his jacket was a small rapid-fire pistol. Reaching around his back, Reese took out the weapon and started down the corridor, which jail had come from. The corridor stank vaguely of the cell discharge that had erupted from Andy's arm. The poor fool hadn't a clue what he had put in his cartridge loader, and truthfully, Reese didn't care. Another trace attic and another backwoods outpost, they meant little to him, though he liked to foster other ideas. As the corridor started to widen and branch off at intersections, Reese continued to charge forward, following the distinctive stench of cell. As Reese's head cleared, anger and rage replaced the foggy sensation that had preceded it. How dare jail come after him after all that had happened? No cell, no cartridge, was worth the time and money that fool must have spent on tracking him. Still, It didn't matter too much. The stench of cell was getting stronger. As Reese approached a branch in the corridor system that led directly to an array of docking ports, he slowed and raised his gun. Gently, he raised his body against the back of the corridor and readied himself to swing out. Since he had inserted the cartridge into his arm, no coherent thought had passed through Andy's mind. Blasting red and black lights, letters and numbers, symbols and images had all exploded in his mind in a cacophony of light and sound. Andy knew he was moving, that his legs were working under him, that his arm was wrapped around someone, that there was a strong, unfamiliar smell. Even the initial euphoria of the cartridge insert was gone, leaving only a fast, disappearing memory. A blast of wind struck Andy's face, stirring him back to partial consciousness. His eyes opened reluctantly, admitting only a little light. Although he could no longer see the letters, symbols, and numbers when his eyes opened, he was still aware of them pounding through the back of his mind, always on the edge of consciousness. He looked to his right, watching through half-glazed eyes as the stranger worked a manual pump to open the heavy door to a small ship. As the door slid open, a blast of stale air hit Andy, making him retch painfully. The stranger regarded Andy only briefly before marching him inside the ship. If the scenario was claustrophobic, it was at the very least well-maintained. The same could not be said for the ship Andy was being pulled into. Once through the featureless airlock, he felt himself being laid down upon an old grated floorway. Above him, wires and cables hung from the roof in large knotted bundles, a few odd ones sparking suspiciously. The view was blocked promptly as the stranger leaned over Andy, his own partially spiked hair now starting to fall down over his eyes.
"What's your name?"
the stranger said in clear, neutral tones.
"What's your name?"
"Andy." The word was labored, but at least he was able to speak. The images were pounding through the back of Andy's mind were beginning to clear. He could not understand them, not exactly, but he did understand that he had been uploaded.
What the hell was that? It wasn't a hit.
"It's called cell, Andy, and it was never meant to be taken by you."
"Really?" Andy coughed and sputtered as he spoke. "Who was supposed to take it?"
"I was."
"And who are you?"
"My name's Jail."
"What's happening to me?" Andy struggled out after a pause.
"You're reacting to the cell. I need to get that cartridge out of you, or it will probably kill you."
Andy's mind exploded again, and colors blocked his vision briefly before it returned. A strong, slightly foul stench reached his nostrils. Following the smell, he tilted his head to look at his right arm, now covered in a yellow pus that was hardening around the edges of his cartridge loader. Jail was doing the same thing, his attention focused upon the locked unit.
What the hell is a cell? Why can I see colors? What's happening to me?"
Andy finally blurted out in a near sob.
"Never mind, Andy. Suffice it to say that what the cell is putting in your head, I need in mine."
"Why? Are you addicted?"
Jail chuckled slightly at this, though there was no humor in his laugh. Once again, he pressed hopelessly upon Andy's cartridge unit, yielding no results.
"No, Andy. I'm not an addict. Cell isn't a drug. It's a hyperdata patch. And right now, you're taking all of the information I need to complete my mission."
Mission? What mission? What are you talking about?"
Andy was slowly drawing closer to true lucidity. The longer he lay there, the more he spoke.
"Never you mind, Andy. Just trust me. It's important."
Reese burst around the corner, only to find the cell-stinking corridor empty, as he had the previous four. But the smell was stronger now. He had already eliminated a large number of docking ports from his search. Jail was trying to escape with his merchandise, and something had to be done about that. Grimly, Reese paced through another corridor. This one bathed in a dull red light. He was reaching the end of the port bays in this section. Jail had to be close. Had to be. There was simply nowhere else he could go. Slowly, he approached another docking port, the stench of cells seeming particularly thick the closer he got. The hatchway was open, and he could hear voices inside. One labored and spoken through stolen gulps of air. The other strong and commanding, reassuring in its own way. Dropping his pace, Reese drew up alongside the hatch. The cell was tangible now, sticking in Reese's nostrils and assaulting his taste buds, making him want to retch. Reese could barely stand it where he was, could not imagine how Jail was still conscious, let alone able to nurse his patient. Still, it mattered little to Reese. He wanted his merchandise back. Addicts would pay through the nose for cell. They didn't need to know what it was. Triple dose was as good a name as any, Reese supposed. And they'd pay for it, regardless of what it actually did to the user. They always woke up with such massive gaps in their memory that they tended to assume the drug had given them the best night of their lives. Everyone was happy. For a while, at least. Reese raised his pistol, pulled back the arming mechanism, and waited for a moment to allow his heart rate to settle. A small smile spread across his narrow features, and his eyes drew to well-focused slits. He prepared himself and allowed his smile to widen. 1, 2, 3. Finally, after several seconds of labored work, Jail stopped tampering with the cartridge unit in Andy's arm. Resignedly, he reached into an inside pocket on his jacket and pulled out the long, pen-shaped machine he had knocked Reese unconscious with. As soon as his fingers wrapped themselves into the correct position, the end of the tube began to glow red, casting light throughout the ship that spilled into the corridor outside. He held the device steadily over Andy's cartridge unit and hesitated. Using this device could damage the cell, could kill Andy, though that thought was not particularly important to Jail. Again, he hesitated, watching as a fine yellow liquid poured from the unit. Andy was mumbling, falling in and out of consciousness. Jail was not unsympathetic. He knew what it was like to take cell for the first time. It had taken him a long time to develop his current resistance to the data transfer technique. But even after all of this time, he could not imagine what Andy must be seeing. No two cell transfers were alike. And this one was different than any that had gone before. If that cartridge was not removed from Andy, the things this data miner would know, the things he could do... Jail ignored the thought. Andy was starting to spasm. Moving the glowing tube closer to Andy's arm, Jail waited. Very quietly, deep in Andy's arm, the cartridge unit began to work. Gears and mechanical parts were starting up and grinding. The case was starting to open. The top of the unit paused briefly, caught on some of the hardened yellow pus that was coating Andy's right arm. Gently, Jail broke the layer of hardened discharge and the unit ejected suddenly, sending the cell cartridge to the ground. Andy's body lurched violently as he took a deep gulp of air, his hands flailing wildly for a moment before finally coming to rest. Jail waited a moment before moving, watching Andy take a few labored gulps of breath, his eyes flickering open. After several seconds, Andy focused upon Jail and recognition flooded his face.
I know what was in the cell.
Reese took a single last deep breath, filling his lungs. He waited until he could hold no more air. Instantaneously, he pivoted around the side of the airlock into Jail's ship, his pistol leveled before him. As he rounded upon the open airlock, Reese quickly swept the scene before him, taking in as many details as he could in the fraction of a second he had available to him. Andy lying half-conscious upon the floor, shouting deliriously at the top of his voice. Jail crouched over him, his collar still turned up around his neck, his attention focused solely upon Andy, and the cell cartridge lying in a pool of yellow pus upon the floor. Uncontrollably, Reese's eyes were drawn to the cell cartridge, unconsciously checking it to ensure all of the telltale markings that set it aside from an ordinary data cartridge or trace cartridge were in place. They were, and Reese's heart leapt at the sight of his valuable merchandise. Without any more hesitation, Reese turned his attention back to Jail, who had been able to turn partially around and fired three short bursts from his pistol. The first bullet struck Jail in his left shoulder, knocking him backwards and onto Andy's trembling body. The second missed altogether, flying through the space where Jail's chest had been before the first bullet had struck him. The third shot flew past Jail's head, grazing it as it went. Watching as Jail fell, Reese stepped closer to the two bodies, edging towards the cell cartridge. Andy watched through only half-aware eyes as Reese reached down for the cartridge, his limbs burning and head heaving. Andy slowly pushed upwards, rolling Jail's unconscious form from his own. The room started to spin upon its axis, and Andy had to fight against the sudden sensation to retch or vomit. Rolling out onto his side, he reached an arm futilely out towards Reese, mouthing something neither of them understood.
"Sorry, Andy, but you tried to steal my merchandise from me."
Callously, Reese raised his pistol so that the barrel was aimed squarely at the center of Andy's head and smiled.
"Goodbye, Andy."
From behind Andy, Jail struggled onto his side, watching as Reese raised his pistol to Andy's head. A vague horror pulsed through his body at the sight, and he struggled to his knees. Reese caught the motion through the corner of his eyes and turned his pistol away from Andy and aimed it instead towards Jail. Shooting out his right arm, Jail wrapped his fingers around the thin steel tube he had used to open Andy's cartridge unit. The end was still sending out a throbbing red light as he aimed it towards Reese. Ignoring the pain in his left side, Jail twisted the base of his device. The red light being emitted changed rapidly in frequency, altering from an indiscriminate pulsing pattern into a highly regimented burst of light. Reese squeezed the trigger of his pistol as the regimented pulsing exploded into a flood, covering the room for a brief second in scarlet light. Reese's eyes started to water almost immediately, his fingers trembling and his muscles aching. With no small amount of effort, he squeezed the trigger of the pistol his arm was no longer able to support. A short, rasping explosion filled the room as both weapons discharged at the same moment. Andy knocked upon his back, closed his eyes tightly against the sights and sounds. When he opened them again, both Reese and Jail were lying deathly still. Turning his head one way and then the other, Andy could see clearly both of the still figures. Jail lay limply upon his back, laboring to breathe. Reese was slumped against the bulkhead behind him, caught in a sitting position, his eyes open and a look of terror on his face. Trails of blood made their way down from the corner of his eyes onto his cheeks and neck. No matter how hard he tried to move, Andy could not. His only other option was to tilt his head and face Jail's barely breathing body. For a long moment, Andy lay paralyzed upon the floor of Jail's ship, convinced he would die. The delirium of the cell cartridge had not yet fully passed for Andy, and he struggled to suppress the images of numbers, symbols, and letters flying through his mind. After some minutes, he became aware of a sound, a shuffling, clumsy noise, and turned to the direction of its creator. Jail had struggled to his knees and was moving towards Andy. A wound leaking blood was clearly visible upon his chest, and as he reached Andy, he coughed a stream of blood over his chin. Without speaking, Jail leaned over Andy and turned his right arm so the open cartridge reader was exposed. Vaguely, Andy started to panic, struggling as much as his body would allow. Jail seemingly effortlessly held him pinned to the deck of the ship. Pulling up the sleeve of his own jacket, Jail exposed a cartridge unit almost identical to Andy's own. pressing it softly with his left hand to eject the cartridge that was contained inside. The cartridge was filled with three tiny bottles, each containing a dark, translucent green liquid. Jael, leaning forward and with blood foaming from his mouth, slid the cartridge into Andy's reader, closing it when he was finished. The new cell cartridge began to fill Andy with a certain ecstatic relief that he had already come to associate with a coming agony. For a moment, Jael hovered over Andy, smiling grimly through blood-covered teeth.
Why?
Andy struggled.
I know what was in the cell.
To this, Jael could only smile once more before collapsing onto Andy. By the time Jael's body came to rest, Andy's mind was already elsewhere, no longer conscious of the dead man now hugging his own paralyzed body. Ecstatic delirium filled Andy's body for a few moments longer before being replaced with something else. Something far less enjoyable. Andy sat at the controls of Jael's old ship, staring at them with an absent awareness, not really caring to understand where he had come to know the use of them. The stench of cell was thick in the air of the ship, but he ignored it, already used to the odor. He sat in a simple, upright chair, wearing the same white shirt and black tie he had been wearing for days now. Over the shirt, he wore a deep brown jacket with the collar turned up. Barely aware he was doing so, Andy wandered into the aft chamber and began fetching himself some breakfast. A simple, tasteless meal. Later, he meandered back to the controls of the ship. It had been flying, apparently automatically, for some days now. Checking some instruments and a surprisingly advanced navigation screen, Andy subtly altered the course of the ship, bringing it back on course for its destination. Distractedly, Andy rubbed his forehead. Awareness had been slow in returning, was still some way off, in fact. But he knew now what he had to do. Looking down to a small instrument panel, Andy picked up the half-spent cartridge that was sitting upon it. Raising the cell cartridge to his face, he examined it closely. Something he had done numerous times in the past days, though he retained almost no memory of doing so. Gently, he replaced the cell to the control panel he had lifted it from, and corrected the ship's course once more. He had to keep it safe. He knew what was in the cell. Thank you for listening to Cell by Darren Reed. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. And be sure to follow the links to our journal for notes about the production of Variant Frequencies. You can find out more about Darren Reed at www.myspace.com/DarrenReedCell. The Parsec Awards can be found at www.parsecawards.com. Thank you from the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
Welcome to the realm of skepticality. What is skepticality? Skepticality is a podcast for those of us who view the world in a skeptical way. We do our best to find the truth behind the news, urban legends, UFOs, paranormal encounters, science, underreported social issues, and historical misconceptions.
You just don't get it.
Do you have a problem with the news? Do you like to make fun of those neighbors with tinfoil hats? Do you want to learn some new stuff? Do you want to get something you're not going to hear on your 24-hour McNews channel? Or the local radio dial.
Sure, yeah.
Right. Then tune in by visiting us at www.skepticality.com.
Spell it.
That's skepticality.com. Grab a couple of shows and stick them in your ear.
Ooh, it's waxy in there. liar.
And by all means, don't listen to that voice in my head.
Voice? What voice?
No voices.
Skepticality. Truth in podcasting.